Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Wow, full house today. It's good to see everyone. Morning, Tim.
Hi.
So, some of us have been engaged in this wild and raucous retreat for about a day and a half now. Actually, it's not wild and raucous. It's pretty quiet. And actually, it seems like a lot longer than a day and a half. Seems like about a week. That's okay. That's kind of in a good way. So, yeah, about 15 of us are doing this weekend retreat. And that's why today, after the talk, there won't be any tea, because we need to kind of keep our quiet container here so we can focus on our practice. So we really appreciate the fact that... Sure.
Who takes care of the microphone? They can't hear anything.
Oh, they can't hear? Okay.
Ted, I think you disconnected. You're not going off yet.
Is it working now? Sounds a lot different to me. You can hear? Can you guys hear? Is it too loud? Sounds really strange to me, but if it's good for you guys, that's good. How about if I do this? Is that okay? All right. So, yeah, so as I was saying, some of us are on retreat, and we appreciate you're supporting our practice by allowing us to just go back to our retreat at the end of the talk. And please come back next week and come to tea and engage in some conversation. Get to know us a little better. Let us get to know you a little better. Also, we do these retreats in silence. It's very helpful to us. So my talk this morning, you could say, is about expectations, which is one of my favorite subjects, because expectations really cause trouble. It took me maybe a few decades to figure this out, but once I did, I thought, yeah, that's it, it's those expectations. So I'm going to talk about that, but it's going to take me a while to get there, so just bear with me, okay? There's some stuff I have to go through, some stories here. So my wife Kathy and I were in a lower town in St. Paul on Monday, and we saw one of these sidewalk poems. You know those poems, they stamp right into the sidewalk when it's wet? And we stopped to read it, and it said, "A dog on a walk is like a person in love. You can't tell them it's the same old world." A dog on a walk is like a person in love. You can't tell them it's the same old world. And sometimes I think you could add Zen students to this list. You know what a dog on a walk is like. A dog on a walk is like, oh boy, I'm on a walk. I can't believe I'm on a walk. I can't believe there's that tree there. This is just so great. And it's the same place the dog has walked like every day of its life. But it doesn't care. It's new. Like, wow, this is it. And that's why dogs don't have to do zazen. They're already there. And a person in love is the same way, I think, a person in love. And I've been lucky enough to experience this, having been in love. And sometimes I often say, I bet people get tired of it, I say, there are really two halves of my life, the half before I met Kathy and the half afterwards. And there's like this line, this demarcation, you know, because it so changed my world. And I could also say there are two halves of my life before I began serious Zazen practice and after. And that's true, too, but that's not quite as true as the thing about Kathy. So, sorry, Zazen. But you have to keep things in perspective, right? You have to keep things in balance. Love matters. So, when you're in love, the world is new. You know, it's just everything is new. And wow, I can't believe it is this way. And for some students, the world becomes new for some Zen students, I should say. And not just Zen. I mean, there are other traditions out there where that might wake you up and help you to see the world as it's new. But Zen is what I know about. Now, it's not always. It's not true for everyone. If you're brand new to Zen Center, you're probably thinking, well, what's the big deal? I don't really get it. It seems actually a little strange to me or whatever. And if you're on a retreat and if you're having a really difficult time, because retreats are very challenging, you may be thinking, well, this doesn't all feel that new and it doesn't feel like being in love. That's possible. And, yeah, some of us are kind of on that delightful edge right now where we're simultaneously awake and exhausted. And it's kind of a fun place to be, kind of a weird, edgy place to be, kind of a fertile place to be, I think. But I've heard it said from people who have experienced it that sometimes throwing yourself into Zen practice can be a bit like falling in love. And I've experienced that too. It's something about the surrender, I think. And it continues now for me. And it's a little giddy sometimes. I get a little giddy about my Dharma brothers and sisters and my friends here. And this practice, and the way the sunlight comes in the afternoon when you're on retreat, and how I've done walking meditation in this room, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times, but every once in a while, these radiators we have here, they just look new to me, and sometimes they're really funny. So the ritual is new. The world is new. Because with this practice, we learn to see. We learn to see, I think, in a new way. We see this moment in meditation. Not the last moment. Not the expectations we brought to this moment. But this very moment, we learn to see that, whatever it is. And then when we walk outside, we see that too, whatever is there. And it's new. You know, I've seen this oak tree out here, the one with that long horizontal branch out here in front. I've seen that hundreds of times. But every once in a while, it's like new. It's not even tree. It's just, wow, it's that. And this newness is really the essence of Zen, I think. This newness. And this practice is a lot about giving up expectations. Because if we have expectations, we can't see what's here right now. We can only see what we think it ought to be. We're comparing it to something else. It's too complicated. Our brain shouldn't be that complicated. So we forget all we've learned in a way. Not permanently. It comes back when we need it. But in a way, we forget all that we've learned and we just let it come in. And we have various ways of cultivating this awareness. And the first thing we do is we turn things off. Literally. We turn off our phone. We turn off the music in our ears. We turn off the TV at home. We turn off the radio in the car. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. So we can find a little quiet. So we can, find that space in between the thoughts. So then we can begin to turn off our incessant thoughts. Not so much turn them off as gently turn away from them. And turn towards something else that's quieter. And it takes a little while. And it takes a little effort. But turning things off in this way, including our thoughts, is about quieting the mind. Once the mind is quiet, then we can cultivate this all is new thing. And how do we do that? We find opportunities for mindfulness. For instance, Sesshin, the retreat that we're in now. We remove stimuli because we need that quiet. We cover up the bulletin boards. We even discourage people from wearing T-shirts with writing on them. If you're in a 7-day retreat and you follow the same person in walking meditation every time and you read the same slogan like 200 times, it can get into your mind. We try to quiet things like that. We face the wall when we sit. We don't need a watch because we have this system of hitting a wooden block and hitting bells that tell you what to do. So you really don't have to think. You don't have to think about hardly anything. You don't have to think about the next thing. You're just free to be here in the moment. We try to pare life down to its basic elements. So really what we're doing is for a time, eliminating choice, so we can just be. So there's no thought needed as to what's going to come up next. And when something does come up, we can be surprised by it. We can embrace it. We can let it go completely. And then here's the next thing. Here's the next thing. And choice is fine, and we all need to make choices. But if we can eliminate it for a while, we can really learn something. And then when we come back to the world of choosing, we're refreshed. Another way that we cultivate all is new is koan practice. And that's something we're doing in this retreat. We're talking about koans and mantras, and everyone has chosen a koan or a mantra to hold in their mind. And a koan, of course, is a sort of situation, question, riddle that really can't be solved with the logical mind. And it's sort of designed to frustrate your logical mind and bring you to a place of great openness where you will see things in a different way. So this process is important. The process of holding the koan, embracing it, being with it, maybe repeating it to yourself, is really more important than any answer you might come up with. So these things help us to give up on knowing. We want to know everything. We want to be precise about stuff. I guess we want a little control. And a koan kind of puts you in that place where you don't have that control. And that is a fertile place. And another thing we do is we work with teachers. And a good Zen teacher will challenge, probably very, very gently, your habitual ways of thinking. And will point out the ways perhaps that you ordinarily avoid things, things that you need to look at, things that you have maybe tried to exclude from your world. And we're really about letting it all in, letting it all in. And I've heard Bouchot talk about the Dokusan process. I think Bouchot is doing the intro up on the third floor, saying that he'll be with someone who will say this thing and this thing and this thing, and then they're going on. He says, wait a minute. Let's go back to that one thing. What was that one thing you skipped over? That was the really interesting thing. Tell me more about that. He's encouraging going to the place that you need to go. So this practice is about embracing what is hidden and what is unknown. And that means deliberately leaving the place of comfort that we all seek. Most of us spend most of our lives trying to get comfortable. And that's great in some ways, but it can narrow our view. So deliberately leaving that place of comfort means deliberately making ourselves vulnerable. And that, of course, sounds a little scary because we all want control. We all want control of our lives. And control has its place. We certainly need to keep things together. But a healthy balance for that is the sad but true knowledge that ultimately we do not have control. And if we're not in denial of that fact, if we know that ultimately we really don't have control, I think we can come from a place of more honesty in the world, a place of acting in the world from a place of truth. And I think we make ourselves suffer by trying to control what is uncontrollable. We do that a lot. And giving up control is a kind of surrender. And when you give up control, the world is new. Because you're letting it be. You're letting it come to you. You're not going to it with your ideas. You're letting it come to you. It's a radical change. When you don't know, when you only don't know, the world is new. So when we saw the poem about the dog, that was on my birthday, and I'd like to tell you about my birthday. Now, this is not a big dramatic story. Not much happens. It's a story about ordinary events. But there's some events that I watched kind of closely, and I hope that they're instructive. And this is something about giving up, about having expectations, giving up expectations, moving from a place of knowing and a place of wanting to a place of not knowing and a place of saying, oh, this is how it is. So, but before I can tell you about my birthday, I have to tell you about Kathy's birthday. Because our birthdays are 8 days apart, which is pretty cool. 8 days apart in the spring. And this year I took both of those days off from work, which was really a good idea. I'm going to keep doing that. And Kathy's birthday was on a Monday. And we didn't make any plans for her birthday. We decided to wing it to allow for serendipity. And we like to do this. We like to not make plans and see what happens. Our best trips that we've gone on have been ones that we really don't plan. You know, our plan might be, well, we're going to go probably to Wisconsin. And maybe we put our bikes in the truck or whatever. But we just go places and we just find things. And we've stumbled on some of the most wonderful things that way and just really had a lot of fun. And Kathy is really open to serendipity. And I'm so lucky because at the end of the day, I asked her to tell me about her day. And she will tell me these stories. And her stories are like, well, I went to the grocery store. And it's always about how she interacted with people there and stuff that happened. And she sort of has this quality of opening herself up to people, getting a conversation going, getting them laughing, and then telling them what a great job they're doing. And pretty soon, they all just love her. And it's this really beautiful scene. And I wish I was like that naturally. I have to kind of work on that kind of thing. But it's pretty cool. Like the other day, she said she went and she got her car fixed. And she was talking to everybody. She got them laughing. She started telling them what a great job they did. It was such important work. She appreciated it so much. Left them all feeling really good about themselves. And one of them said, I see your engine light is still on. We're going to fix that for free. So that's not why she does it, but people are always offering. People are always offering to do stuff for free. So we like spontaneity. So on her birthday, we started with, well, what do we want for breakfast? She thought Eggs Benedict. So we looked up online who has the best Eggs Benedict. We ended up going to Nicollet Island and eating breakfast. And we kind of explored Nicollet Island. I've never explored that before. There are all these houses there. It's a funny little neighborhood. It's literally an island in the middle of Minneapolis. Really special place. She showed me De La Salle High School, where all of her brothers went to high school. Then we went to a lot of other places in Minneapolis and just kind of wandering around. And it really felt like a vacation. I won't give you the details because it'll sound really mundane. We just went in these shops and things. But the thing is, stuff was new. We were open and stuff was new. And I went back to work refreshed. So my birthday was on a Tuesday, 8 days later. And again, we didn't have any plan because we wanted it to be spontaneous, because we wanted it to be like her birthday. Okay, this should set off alarm bells right now. Expectations, right? You know where this story's going. So we didn't have a plan, except I did have one thing to do. I had to work on my Dharma talks. This was just last Tuesday, and I knew I was doing 3 Dharma talks this weekend. So that was there. I knew sometime during the day I had to do that. So we started with breakfast. What'll I have for breakfast? I think crepes. Yes, I must have crepes, because it's my birthday. I can have anything I want. So we look it up online. We find a place which is reputed to have the best crepes in Minneapolis. We go there. It turns out to be this little tiny shop in the medical arts building. And this was really fun. We ended up sitting in the lobby because that's where the tables were. And she told me, you know, I used to come here to the dentist when I was a little kid. And I'm endlessly fascinated by her stories of growing up in Minneapolis with 11 siblings. And she says, yeah, I'd come down here with my brother. He was like 2 years older than her. And they were both little kids. She says the dentist could never believe that these 2 little kids would come downtown by themselves. But that's kind of how it was in this really big family, you know, kind of on their own. I found that fascinating. So, and of course, she talked to the guys in this little tiny shop and said, your crepes are great. How long you been here? And pretty soon they're feeling great. And that was a lot of fun. So that was good. So far, so good. We decide to go to the MIA, to the Art Institute, and we leave for that. But one thing is, it's really cold. It was so cold Tuesday. And you know how the spring has been? You don't know how to dress. And I had worn this sort of sport coat, and I was freezing. I bet it was like 20 degrees. So that wasn't so great. And it was about the time we got to the MIA that I realized that something was off. Kathy was engaging somebody about tours and things like that, and I just wasn't interested. I was kind of standing to the side. And then we chose an exhibit to go to, and it was this contemporary art exhibit that's there now, and maybe some of you have seen it. And it's a nice exhibit, but it wasn't what I needed on that particular day. Now, I know Zen practice is all about embracing the unknown and the difficult with courage and equanimity, and that's what teachers are supposed to do. But I tell you, sometimes you just want something a little soothing. You know, you get a little tired. You just need a little break. And that's how I was feeling on my birthday. So I go into this contemporary art exhibit, and it's really provocative stuff. And a lot of it's disturbing. And some of it is sort of deliberately unattractive. You know, this is what art is supposed to do. And on another day, it might have seemed great to me, but it was like, oh, man, I don't want this today. I don't really want this. Plus, it's just sort of, there's no theme to it. It's 50 different things. So I'm wandering. I kind of move through there kind of fast. I'm not liking this, you know. And Kathy's liking it. She's reading all the things on the wall. And she's like, wow, look at that. That's great. So I move through the whole thing pretty quickly. And I get to the last room. And the last room is a surprise. It's a film of Tibetan pilgrims circumambulating Mount Kailash, which is, I think, in Tibet, or maybe it's in Nepal, I'm not sure, but it's this dramatic, pointed mountain that people walk around, and I think it takes weeks to do this, and some do it while doing prostrations. So it was this film that was just showing people moving slowly around the mountain. And I thought, okay, this is good. So I sat down and I watched the whole thing. And it was very peaceful. And everyone coming out of the exhibit, everyone stopped and watched that film for a while. And I thought that was really, really sweet. But still, after that little respite, something was still off. It was still cold and raining, and I still had to work on my talks. And I think Kathy was noticing I was getting quieter and quieter because I was thinking about my talks. And we went home. And before I could work on my talk, I had to look at my Zen emails. And that ended up taking about 2 hours. And by the time I looked at my Zen emails, I was too tired to work on the talk. And I took a nap. I slept for like 2 or 3 hours. And okay, the talk's not done. I don't know what's going to happen here, but the talk's not done. We went out again, we got dinner, we saw the poem on the sidewalk. A dog on a walk is like a person in love. You can't tell them it's the same old world. And then we went to this thing in the evening. We went to see Krista Tippett, who has a show on public radio talking about spiritual stuff. She's really cool. And she was being interviewed, and she said a lot of wonderful things. She talked about asking questions, how questions can be as smart as answers. She talked about moving away from the idea of certainty. She talked about embracing the mystery. And at this point, I'm kind of like, yeah, you know. So I'm thinking, you know, it was not quite a great birthday. Okay, I may be exaggerating a little bit here to make my point. I mean, it wasn't like a terrible day, but I noticed these things in myself. You know, I noticed how I had expectations. I wanted it to be like Kathy's birthday. Why can't it be like Kathy's birthday? It was supposed to be this series of surprising adventures. So, obviously, it was the expectations that did me in. And birthdays will do that to you, right? Birthdays and expectations, they just go together. Holidays are like that. You got to watch these things. So I got up the next morning at 4:30, left for Zen Center at 5:05, and I was still feeling a bit unsettled. But, so I'm thinking, wow, okay, there's that. There's that thing that happened yesterday. And I have mantras and koans on my mind because that's going to be the theme of the Dharma talk. So I begin a mantra. I begin a mantra. What's the appropriate mantra here? Well, the thing is, I really wanted to be kind of certain yesterday of how things were going to be. I wanted them to be a certain way, and I kept feeling uncertain, and I kept denying that, and things were just kind of getting all balled up. So here's the mantra I'm going to choose. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. And there was something kind of soothing about that, because it was truthful. I could have been saying, things are kind of a mess right now, but it's true, I didn't know. And there was something kind of freeing about that, kind of entering into a more truthful realm, which is, I don't know. I'm not in control. This is how it is. I don't know. I don't know. And after a while, it became not knowing. Not knowing. Not knowing. Because I don't think I really need the I in there. You know, this doesn't have to be about me, Ted. This doesn't have to be about my ego. Just not knowing. Not knowing. And it seemed a little positive. And then, not knowing, I take the next step. Not knowing, I take the next step. I take the next step. Because I don't want to be just in a place of not knowing and paralyzed because I don't know anything. Even in this realm of not knowing, I need to take the next step. I need to take care of the things that need to be taken care of. And wouldn't it be something to be able to come from this place of not knowing and act from that here in the world? There's something about form and emptiness coming together there, which is nice. Not knowing, I take the next step. Not knowing, I take the next step. And then that became not knowing, I take this step. Why does it need to be the next step? Why does it need to be expressed in relationship to some other step? There's only this step. There's only this step right now. Not knowing, I take this step. This step. This step. This step now. There is no other step. This step now. Not knowing this step now. Not knowing this step now. And there is a freedom in that truth of not knowing. It is what it is. It's this. It's uncertainty. Things maybe aren't so good right now, or at least they're not so certain, or there's not control. But hey, at least I can be honest about that, and I can proceed with my life. So it's kind of like a big sigh. Just coming back. Yeah. Okay, be all that as it may, there's still this here. So suddenly, when you come back to things as they are, the world is new again. And Wednesday, the day after my birthday, was a pretty good day. I came here both before and after work. I had some great conversations with various folks. I enjoyed my day at work. It was pretty good. And then Thursday morning, I was driving to Northfield. And I know I should just drive. I should drive mindfully, and I try to do that a lot. But occasionally, I'm also kind of a busy guy, so sometimes I think about my talks when I'm driving. And as I was driving to Northfield, it just kind of came to me what talk I could do. So what I've sort of done here is to do a talk about how, well, I never really got my talk done. So it's great being a Zen teacher. We have a lot of tricks. But seriously, this is about how I found a way to accept a place that didn't meet my expectations. I found a way to go from I want and I know what I want to I'm not getting what I want and I don't know. And ultimately to a place of that's okay. It's kind of nice to give up that wanting. This is really all right. This is really all right. And I was able to do this with the help of a mantra, which is interesting. We can work on these things. You know, things turn. things turn emotionally just like that sometimes. And you never know, you don't know when it's going to happen, but sometimes some turning words can help. Sometimes just the right word from a teacher can help things to turn. And sometimes you can do that yourself. You can try things. You can try sitting. You can try ritual. You can try repeating a mantra. You can try thinking, well, what is it I need here? Not thinking so much, but going deeper than that. What is it I need here? What is the appropriate thing for this moment, in all honesty? And sometimes you come up with some words that are going to help you. And we can change our lives in ways large and small. So, I don't know, and the world is new. And what I'd like to do, since we have a little time here, is maybe just a little exercise where we all sit a little bit. So if you're not in a position which is conducive to Zazen, move a little bit so you're sitting up straight, not rigidly, but kind of straight, not inclining to the left or the right. Eyes mostly closed. Let's take a deep breath. And let's be aware of what this room feels like. Not what we think it should feel like. Just what it feels like. And now bring your attention to what your body feels like. What does it feel like to sit on this cushion, or sit on this chair, or stand? Not what it should feel like, be honest. If it's a little off, let it be a little off. And now bring the attention to the mind. What's there? Is it quiet? Is it curious? Is it agitated? And now we're going to repeat a phrase. Repeat this phrase to yourself on the out-breath. And that phrase is, only don't know. Breathe in, only don't know. Breathe in, only don't know. Only don't know. Only don't know. Thank you. And do you see the great kindness in only don't know. The great giving nature of that. To say, I don't know. It's not about me in control of everything. It's about my willingness to let things be as they are. That's very generous. It's very open. It's very giving. And that giving quality is a very spiritual quality that helps one with their practice. And it has an effect on the world. If we can give each moment and say, I don't know this moment, that's opening the heart. And that has an effect upon the people around us. So that's my talk this morning, and we have a little time. Are there any comments or perhaps a question? Yes.
That meditation was really powerful. And I started to make this discernment between the only don't know when I'm scared that I'm not enough is actually a dangerous I don't know because I beat myself up.
Uh-huh.
And this, I only don't know when I'm seduced into having to fix something in my own mind for somebody else. The I only don't know has to live with the knowing, but not trying to jam it in.
Yeah.
To some feeling. And that was, I came from that meditation.
Oh, that's really well said. Yeah, there is something about this sort of opening up and giving yourself to the universe that, you know, that doesn't mean I'm nothing, you know. It doesn't mean that I don't matter. It doesn't mean that I'm putting myself down. Because there's a kind of a power in giving yourself up to the universe, too. But we do have that ego, you know, that person who wants to be something. We've all got that. And you have to take care of that person with love, you know. You got to take care of the little guy. He's hurting. So, yeah, so in your I don't know, it can't be, you know, I don't know anything because I'm no good. It's not that at all. Not that at all. Stephanie.
Who might not have someone that inspires them, like Kathy inspired you, and can't help but have expectations of others, so that they don't feel the crassness of the Zen that you felt on that birthday when you needed something and you knew it was right, quote unquote, to do something, but you just did because you achieved it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the art exhibit.
Right.
So there are some people who don't have the want, maybe, of saying, yeah, I know that it's just me expecting something, but actually, you know, I already have everything that's really important. Some people don't.
Yeah.
And then they still need, somehow know in their mind, they need to not have expectations. But how?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a lot there, but I thought about that when I was writing this talk about talking about how fortunate I am with Kathy. And yeah. My really facetious answer is go on eHarmony. That's where I met Kathy. And maybe that's the good answer too, you know, to just keep looking. Took me a while. I've known Kathy 8 years now. 8 years, and I'm no spring chicken. Took me a while. This retreat, a lot's been going on this retreat, you know, and I'm just getting just kind of emotional thinking about just how important family is and people we love, you know. Just how important that stuff is. And that this is really worthy of our efforts to care for the people we love and to seek harmony with people that we may have had disagreements with and to go see our parents and that kind of thing. And to care for the people we love. And if it's difficult with our partner, as it usually is, everyone has times of difficulty, to just really keep after that and just really do our best with an open heart. I mean, that stuff is so very important. So, just, keep at it with an open heart. That's my answer. All right. Anything else? Yes.
I want to thank you for adding the piece, take the next step.
Mm-hmm.
I often find myself in the paralyzed state. The I don't know, so I'll just stay here and hope nothing changes. So I wonder if there's anything we can do to not be accept this moment and then not want it to change. How do we keep moving through life?
Mm-hmm.
While accepting.
Mm-hmm. You don't want the moment to change because it's a good moment or because there's kind of some paralysis there? I just want to clarify. Kind of the paralysis, because we may get to the point where the I don't know. That's a big step from I don't know to take the next step. It really is. And how can we encourage ourselves to take that next step? I think it grows naturally out of the I don't know. And it may seem contradictory. I think it's really a bit of a paradox, you know. Why is it that if everything is just not knowing and uncertainty, why do we do anything? And that seems to be the essential paradox of Zen that I've never been able to answer. But I tell you, I absolutely know it's true that the right thing to do in the world is to make the world better and to do stuff. I just have a lot of trust. Maybe this is where we need a little faith. I don't know. If somebody can explain to me logically why it is, if everything is interdependent, and there's really no knowing and no certainty, we should take care of each other, I would really love to hear that. I can't explain it, but I know it's true. And I think, a little faith. There are a lot of things that we just really can't understand, and yet we need to go there. That's why we have a spiritual realm. Little faith, little magic maybe. Little magic. So I don't know what the magic solution might be, but maybe there's something. Mantra? Magic mantra? Yes, Dean.
I just wanted to, if I could kind of respond a little bit to that, because I can relate with that a lot. And there's a woman, Marsha Linehan, she's a psychologist, and in the 90s she was practicing Zen, and she developed a type of therapy using lots of techniques and skills and little practices that can be really little baby step stuff, but it's really thorough, and it's generally designed for people with some real, you know, real big problems, maybe to hurt themselves a lot, mentally or physically, or emotionally, and in that stuck place where the mind's not turning. And we're back at dukkha, right? The wheel doesn't turn, suffering. So in those situations, they have a list. They have a really nice little system where it's like you can kind of find out where you're at and then try these little practices. That's not working, maybe try this. But some basic things of distracting oneself when you're stuck and can't keep going. Sometimes it's self-soothing. Sometimes it's doing the opposite to the emotion. But just something to think about. It's like they call it dialectical behavior therapy. But it's super helpful and it's based. Came right out of this woman doing psychology and Buddhism practice and thinking about those people who can't maybe make it to the Zen Center on a Sunday because they're maybe not even in a place to get here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Question. Thanks, Dean. I like, you know, the baby step aspect because you just need to do one thing. You don't need to do it all. You don't need to think about the enormity of your life. You just need to do one thing. I think Katagiri always used to say that, just take one step. You know, you just need to do that one thing. You get up and you close the door. You make breakfast, you know. That's all. Just do the one thing. And if you can do the one thing with a whole heart, you're there. You're there. You're completely there in that moment. Worry about the next moment when it comes. Just do this moment. Just do this one thing. When we're here in the Zendo, when it's time to bow, we just bow. When it's time to walk, we just walk. Everything else we can let go. You can't fix it all at once, and you don't have to fix it all at once. So, thanks. All right, well, I think I should turn it over to our esteemed Doan.